Chapter 5. Speaking the Unspeakable. Still early on in my trauma recovery, I connected with my speaking coach, Gail. We got on the phone to chat about one of my upcoming talks. I opened up to her about the trauma. "Gail, I feel that I have a responsibility to speak out about this," I told her. "One in three women are sexually abused, and I want to help people release their trauma." "I understand your desire to serve, but you are not ready," she replied. "If you share this too soon, you will trigger your audiences and maybe even re-traumatize yourself." I understood her concern and promised that I wouldn't share about it too soon. A few days later, I started to prepare for an upcoming talk, and for the first time in my career as a speaker, I was terrified to get on stage. While I'd made a promise to Gail that I wouldn't give a talk on my unresolved trauma, I don't always know what is going to come out of my mouth. Once I got onto the stage, I was in my home zone, as Gail calls it. I felt spiritual inspiration speaking through me, which always provided me with a rush of oxytocin. I felt present, I felt safe, and I felt in control. I joyfully made it through the talk and then headed into the Q&A. The third person to ask a question was a young woman who bravely shared about childhood sexual abuse. For years, I'd witnessed people vulnerably sharing like this. But today, it felt different. Today, her vulnerability was mine. Her terror was mine. Her trauma was mine. She asked for guidance on how to move forward while being stuck in a state of post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. Without thinking, I leaned into the microphone and said, "One in three, including me. You're not alone, my friend. Remember that you are not alone." I could see relief come over her as soon as she realized that I, too, was a trauma survivor. In that instance, I felt good that I had the opportunity to help this young woman know she wasn't alone in her suffering. The moment I got off stage, however, negative feelings flooded over me. I barely made it through the book signing. As soon as I was done, I got into a cab and went home to crawl under the covers and cry. Gail was right, of course. I shared too soon. I couldn't pinpoint the feeling I was having. I didn't understand it. I was overwhelmed, paralyzed, and afraid. Publicly admitting my trauma seriously activated me. A humble moment. Now, 9 months after remembering the trauma, I'd built my therapeutic team, and I was on a mission to heal. This is when I started to direct my awareness toward the warrior part of my personality. The warrior, as I called her, was the hard-charging part of me, ready for a challenge. It was the fearless part of me that got on stage with a microphone 3 months into my sober recovery. The bold part of me that vulnerably shared my truth to audiences of strangers. The driven part of me that was devoted to helping others transform and heal. Around this time, a friend of mine invited me to co-host a weekend workshop for women. Feeling stronger because of the months of therapeutic work, I was eager to get back on stage and serve others. So I said yes to sharing the stage with two other teachers, and I looked forward to being in a room filled with women. I thought I was signing up to teach, but little did I know that the universe was guiding me to learn. In the morning session, I sat back as one of the other teachers led the group. She began to speak about shame. As I sat and listened, I started to feel triggered. Most of the room looked like I was feeling. When the presenter suggested that we were feeling uncomfortable because we were avoiding shame, I got defensive. I thought of myself as a confident person who had overcome so much. What did I have to be ashamed of? Then she suggested we team up with a partner to practice an exercise about shame. And for the first time in my life, I came face to face with the core reason I was running. That impermissible, uncomfortable feeling I'd worked so hard to avoid. The most terrifying emotion of all. Shame. At first, I felt relief as though I'd found the missing piece to a puzzle I'd been trying to solve. Now that the puzzle was complete, major realizations began to set in about my triggers and reactions. I thought about how my immediate response to any issue was outward defense but inward blame. If my husband got mad at me for not helping around the house, I'd fight back and then within minutes blame myself for not being good enough. Or if something went wrong at work, I'd initially want to blame someone else, but then quickly return to my negative mantra, I'm a piece of shit. Shame was underneath it all. As I sat in the audience filled with other students, I realized how much I still had to learn. So much of my suffering came from all the ways I ran from the deepest feeling, the core wound of shame. I realized I had believed that it was easier to judge myself, judge others, overwork, drink, and even fall deep into spiritual practice than it was to face the impermissible shame of what had happened to me. The following week, I brought this realization to my therapist. She looked on with compassion as I opened up about my recognition of shame. With an empathetic tone, she explained to me why the shame was there in the first place. She helped me see that shame was my response to the unexplained cutoff of attachment from a parent. My mother's erratic energy, my father's inability to connect to me, and the traumatic experiences that no one acknowledged or attended to. The day my mother abruptly left my father and told me that I had to help tell my brother the news, I was only 9 years old. All the ways in which my parents were unable to create a safe bond, but instead established the perpetual feeling of neglect turned into chronic disappointment from which I could never rebound. As a child, I felt left alone to manage my feelings. My parents would often say, "There she goes again, Gabby's having another tantrum." Each time one of my parents would cut off their connection to me in an abrupt way like that, I'd go further down the path of believing my big feelings were my fault and that something was wrong with me. I believed all the moments of parental disconnection and cutoff were my fault. I believed wholeheartedly that I was a piece of shit. The origins of shame. In psychology, attachment theory posits that in the first 2 years of life, it is imperative that a child have a strong bond to at least one primary caregiver. It is critical to our development. When bonding is strong and we are securely attached, we feel confident to explore the world, knowing that there is someone we can safely return to. If the bond is insecurely attached, we are afraid to leave or explore, unsure of our ability to return. Securely attached people tend to trust others, and on balance have an easier time navigating life. The insecure attachment is a form of trauma that can affect the direction of a child's life if it remains unresolved. More on attachment in Chapter 9. Even one abrupt cutoff, such as a parent laughing off a child's meltdown or bursting out in rage when a child spills milk, can trigger shame in the moment. That shame can be resolved with a quick repair, honoring the child's feelings and apologizing for the mistake. But when cutoffs are repeatedly left unrepaired, it can turn into chronic shame. Even writing these words right now triggers my shame. I feel ashamed that my emotions weren't acknowledged. I feel ashamed that I didn't have a safe place to turn to when I was in distress. I feel shame carrying the memories of abuse. I can face that shame today, but for over 3 decades, I ran from it. In efforts to avoid the feeling of shame, I built up a story about my childhood that was far different from reality. My story consisted of an amicable divorce. I'd always say that I had hippie parents who were able to maintain a healthy friendship and that I grew up comfortable enough in a wealthy town. Never would I admit that my family struggled financially or that at times my mother's small apartment had a renter occupying one of the bedrooms. I believed in the story that my childhood was happy and that I was safe. I had to create this story in order to survive the shameful truth about my childhood. Hardwired for connection. No human is immune to the ubiquitous emotion of shame. As it turns out, shame is a neurobiological response to feeling abandoned, which Edward Tronick, PhD, director of the Child Development Unit at the University of Massachusetts Boston and an associate professor at the Harvard University School of Public Health, revealed in a powerful study performed in 1975 called the Stillface Experiment. The premise behind the experiment was to demonstrate that babies are extremely responsive to the reactivity, emotions, and social interactions that they receive from those around them. The experiment was set up with 7 pairs of mothers and children. Each mother sat across from her child, playing, laughing, cooing, and smiling. The baby pointed, laughed, and played along. They were deeply engaged in having fun. Then the mother turns her head away and looks back at the baby with a still face. For 2 minutes, she stares at the baby with no expression on her face. At first, the baby tries to get the mother's attention by smiling, pointing, and laughing. Then the baby starts to become distressed, and she throws up her hands in the air and looks away. Soon thereafter, the baby begins to cry and shriek, anything to get the mother's attention. The little baby then loses control of her posture while the crying continues. Finally, after 2 minutes, the mother smiles again and reestablishes connection. The baby immediately shows signs of relief and smiles along. This profound experiment helped demonstrate how babies are hardwired to establish connection. And when that connection is lost, the emergence of distress, shame, and fear becomes visible. Shame is one way children establish an emotional bridge with their parents. Shame can keep us safe by reinforcing the biological need to seek a caregiver when we are young and otherwise helpless. The neurobiological purpose of shame is to keep us out of danger and protected by our parents. So when we notice a parent disconnect, the shame response has us do anything we can to get that connection back. So while shame is a natural response, when it becomes chronic and unresolved, it results in trauma to the nervous system. It happens both from childhood events and from our experiences as adults. When a boss, partner, or family member constantly activates a stress response in us through words, actions, or behaviors that scare us, the normal shame response can move from healthy to traumatic just as it would have during attachment breach in childhood. Avoiding shame at all costs. We have many ways of building up safety mechanisms to avoid our shame. One example involves my friend Billy. He grew up in what looked like a healthy home. Although Billy didn't know it, his mother suffered from a great deal of unresolved trauma. She didn't have the ability to handle negativity or uncomfortable feelings, neither hers nor Billy's. The moment unsettling issues came up, she would try to move as quickly as she could to reestablish positivity without acknowledging any of the problems. So Billy never felt that his emotions were seen or heard. This inadvertent dismissal of his big emotions unconsciously sent Billy into a place of shame and disconnection from his mother. In his adult life, Billy sought out intense emotional connections in romantic relationships to fill the need to have his feelings validated. Each relationship would seem as extreme as a drug addiction. And when a relationship would end, Billy was left feeling unsafe and alone, which led to deep depression. In his late 30s, Billy came to me for help. I took an inventory of his past and his relationships with his parents. As I began to touch on the topic of shame, like all of us, he desperately didn't want to consider it. Billy had lived for decades not even contemplating that he carried any shame. This is because shame hits the core wounds of feeling unlovable and inadequate. Fortunately, Billy was willing to do anything to find some relief from his addictive emotional relationships, so we kept talking. Give me an example of when you feel you need to defend your emotions. He knew the answer right away. He told me that he became infuriated when people casually called him crazy, like when a friend would say, "You're so crazy in relationships." How does it make you feel? It makes me feel misunderstood, like I'm too much. Crying, he added. It really makes me feel ashamed of my emotions and not emotionally taken care of. And there it was, Billy's shame. As we talked more, Billy realized that he was severely ashamed of having feelings his mother had spent decades trying to shut down. He had anesthetized that shame by finding romantic partners who shared his same need to have big emotions. Those relationships gave him a type of freedom and permission to act out all of his feelings. But the more emotional the relationship was, and the more drawn he was to it, the more dysfunctional it became. You may relate to Billy's story and find relief in knowing that many of us act out in a way that avoids the shame we felt as a child. Or you may feel resistant to the concept that shame could be driving your life choices. That's okay. Take a deep breath and be present with any feelings that are coming up. I'm here with you every step of the way. Each word in this book is infused with my love and compassion for your journey. As I write this, I'm intentionally sending healing energy into the manuscript. I'm holding you in a safe container to dip in and out of these uncomfortable emotions. You don't have to experience it all at once. If you can discover where shame may be hiding, then you have the opportunity to face it and move past it, rather than unconsciously letting it rule your life. Sometimes the fastest way to identify shame is to look closely at our reactions to it. Outlined below are the 5 common reactions to feeling ashamed, as taught by my somatic experiencing practitioner, Brian Mahan. I'll go into more detail about somatic experiencing in Chapter 8. You may identify yourself in one or more of these reactions. 1. Attack the other. One way people, including me, respond to feeling shame is by attacking the person who activated the feeling. It's common to project out what we don't want to feel. It's like playing a game of hot potato, quickly turning around to blame and criticize right back. I live most of my life in this cycle. When criticized or triggered into a feeling of shame, I'd attack back in an effort to deflect that feeling away. 2. Attack yourself. Another reaction to shame is the inner critic. It's a core belief that there's something wrong with me. The underlying belief system creates thoughts like, I deserved it. They were right. I'm bad. I'm toxic. And in my case, I would go as far as, I'm a piece of shit. I would initially attack back and then quickly move into self-attack and self-blame. 3. Deny. Denial is a form of dissociation, a way of checking out. In this case, the shame is too much to handle, too painful. Dissociation is a survival mechanism to help one gain distance and space from unbearable feelings. When someone dissociates from shame, they will often create new storylines for the underlying event. For instance, when I first remembered the trauma, I justify or rationalize my story by saying things like, it didn't happen. My childhood wasn't so bad. I even found myself saying out loud to friends, so many people have had it so much worse than me. Denial is also an addict's coping mechanism. Addiction is a form of denying deep-rooted shame. As addicts, we use drugs, sex, love, alcohol, work, gambling, and other addictive patterns to anesthetize the discomfort of shame. Other forms of denial include going into a state of numbness or blankness. I experienced this at times in therapy when we'd turn to a topic that was too shameful for me to face. I would literally begin to fall asleep. This was my brain's way of shutting down the shame response. 4. Fawn and cling. Another way of dissociating from shame is to cling to another person and establish a connection. Fawning and clinging to the person and continually saying, I'll be better, is a childlike shame response that is reenacted as an adult. Unresolved shame triggers child parts of ourselves that feel like they have to make things right for the parent figure. 5. Withdraw. This occurs when someone pulls inward, licking their wounds in isolation. The withdrawn person cannot trust anyone, loses faith and hope. This response can lead to depression and suicidal thoughts. It can also result in the desire to attack in an effort to first fight against the suffering. The body reacts to shame. Shame is an instinctual response rooted in a physiological experience. Brian Mahan says, shame is an embodied belief that something is wrong with me. Because shame exists in the body as well as in the mind, it must be treated somatically. In my therapeutic experience of addressing shame, it became clear that I couldn't just heal it psychologically. I had to allow my body to reveal the shame to me by looking at the physical symptoms that weren't resolved. My unresolved shame kept me stuck in a state of hypervigilance that kept my nervous system from regulating naturally. I was always on high alert, ready to protect and attack, protecting myself from having to experience the shame. This heightened state of arousal felt like perpetual panic, always in the background, no matter what was going on. Stephen Porges, author of the polyvagal theory, teaches that shame, like trauma, is a parasympathetic shutdown and freeze. This is what happens physiologically. 1. The moment we experience shame in the presence of another person, we will automatically cut off social engagement by breaking eye contact. Our head can tilt as we dissociate and disconnect. Our posture may hunch, shoulders roll forward, and our chest concaves. Our pelvis can tuck in as we disengage. 2. Our brain gets scrambled and the larynx constricts to stop us from saying what we were going to say. 3. Then the body freezes, bracing and collapsing in physical protection. These physiological responses may sound familiar to you. Feeling shamed is a threatening, fearful experience. Without realizing it, every time we experience shame, it sends the message, "I am not safe," to the nervous system. That threat ignites a sympathetic charge that can be more than our nervous system can tolerate. At this point, the parasympathetic nervous system tries to contain the charge. This can present like a freeze response. But underneath that freeze resides a tremendous amount of emotional energy in the form of fear, vulnerability, defensiveness, and sadness. We all have unique physical responses to shame that come forward to protect us from the feeling of being unsafe. Some common bodily responses include feelings of disconnection from the body, numbness, dissociation from the current experience, and tightening of the jaw, chest, or throat. Go easy. Our bodies work hard to protect us from the fright of shame. If you were to come out of the freeze state too fast, it would be like ripping off the lid of a pressure cooker. So be sure to go easy. If you feel triggered, take a deep breath and know that there is a gentle way out. However, if looking at your relationship to shame feels like too much, return to this chapter later. Bravely looking at the ways you've been avoiding shame can be uncomfortable and shouldn't be forced. Accept that subtle shifts in your awareness can offer you a new and healthy relationship to your shame. If you feel up for it, follow my guidance to take a closer look at how shame may be running your life. I will guide you through spiritual practices that will help you counter shame and take away its power. To help you move forward with the upcoming exercises, set the intention to honor your shame by seeing it through the lens of love. Let's start with a prayer to let love lead your healing path. Remember, you can replace the word universe with God, spirit, source, love, energy. Thank you, universe, for helping me feel safe as I explore new emotions. Thank you for helping me grow and heal through the lens of love and dissolve self-judgment. Use this prayer to anchor you back into the energy of love as you explore the following methods. Practice awareness. Shame is a pervasive feeling that we cannot avoid, but it can be reprocessed and transformed through techniques that interrupt the pattern. The first step to healing shame is to witness it. In your journal, identify which of the 5 shame responses, attacking others, attacking yourself, denying, fawning, or withdrawing, you most commonly use. Then, throughout the next few days, lovingly and compassionately, notice when something triggers you into one of those responses. Since you've already identified your triggers and their underlying emotions, this exercise is about looking more closely at which of those emotions are disguising shame, such as fear of rejection, feeling unsafe, or feeling unworthy, unlovable, or inadequate. Some common beliefs tied to shame can be, "I'm useless," "I'm a failure," "I don't deserve anything good," and on and on. Your willingness to recognize the patterns and be inquisitive about shame is an act of self-respect. You cannot heal what you are unwilling to see. Even though I couldn't recognize or admit the shame at first, I would commonly say, "No one can take care of me. I have to fix it all myself." Recognizing my 2 most common shame responses helped me see how the feeling of being out of control triggered childhood memories of being neglected and expected to take care of myself. Unpacking this pattern further, I noticed that when I felt out of control, I also felt helpless and unsafe, but ashamed that I couldn't do anything about it. Accepting yourself. Accepting that we all face shame is the first step to accepting it for yourself. First, remind yourself that shame is a normal, physiological experience. You didn't create your shame. It's part of the human condition. So acknowledge that you are not alone in your shame. We all suffer from it, and we all have the power to transform it. Secondly, it can be helpful to remember that healthy shame is a biological way of protecting a relational connection. As children, shame kept us ever looking for a strong connection with our caregiver. As adults, healthy shame helps us see when we've hurt others or broken an interpersonal bridge. Establishing a healthy relationship to our shame supports our connection to others by helping us see our part and apologizing when necessary. Finally, a healthy relationship to shame allows us to explore deeper, vulnerable emotions that can be brought to the surface for healing. The goal isn't to get rid of shame, but to use it as a barometer for our relational connections and unhealed wounds. Your willingness to open up to the concept of shame means that you're on the precipice of a radical transformation. Your willingness to witness and transform this painful emotion moves you toward freedom and brings real relief. Becoming grounded and steady. Now that you've done the profound work of acknowledging your shame response, and therefore your shame, it's time to discover some tools that will help you reassess and reframe childhood shame that you've carried for decades. These methods will help you face the shame from a resourced, grounded, steady state. Resourcing is anything that gives you a sense of well-being, safety, or pleasantness. For some people, when they notice a shame reaction, it can help to envision that they are on a beach, in a beautiful forest, or with a close friend who makes them feel safe. Ground yourself by leaning into anything that can give you a sense of well-being in the moment. When I first began to think about my shame, I noticed how quickly I would dissociate from the feelings and how my body would go numb. At times, I even felt like I was floating out of my body. So I found these practices a helpful way to stay connected to my body. If you're feeling out of control or afraid, allow these practices to help you ground yourself in a safe place. 1. A power pose. Stand up and get your body into Wonder Woman or Superman pose. Get into a strong stance with your legs shoulder-width apart and put your hands on your hips. Roll your shoulders back and lift your chin up slightly. Settle into the feelings that arise as you stand in this posture. This pose is great for raising inner strength and confidence. A psychological science study in 2010 showed that assuming a power pose before a meeting can boost your self-confidence and even change your hormone levels. I practice the power pose whenever I prepare to get onto the stage and present. Getting into this stance frees up my energy and instantly makes me feel a sense of inner strength and confidence. 2. Grounding your body. Rub the palms of your hands together or tap your feet gently on the floor. Breathe deeply. On the exhale, push your hands down on your thighs. On the inhale, pull up on your thighs. Repeat 5 times. Tap your feet gently on the floor or rub your hands together again. This simple method will help you feel grounded in your body. These tools will help you get back to a resourced state in the midst of a shame reaction. Once you are grounded, then you can move into facing shame through a loving lens. My somatic experience teacher Brian Mahan coined the term flossom, flawed and awesome. When one is flossom, they have the ability to recognize and acknowledge that we all have flaws and that we can still be good people, he says. So let's start by accepting that with all of your history, stories, and shameful feelings, you are flawsome. Then take a moment to be proud of yourself for having the bravery to look at your shame and the willingness to move forward. It may feel scary, but it's such a loving act of self-care. When we bring our shadows to the light, then they can be healed. Self-compassion. Once I was able to identify and accept that I had shame, I began to speak compassionately to my shame. Right now, lovingly remind yourself that you are not your shame. Even if you don't yet know the root cause, become willing to see yourself in a new light. Here are some affirmations to repeat to self-soothe in moments of shame. I am not my shame. I am safe and loved. I honor my feelings and allow myself to feel them now. I'm doing a great job caring for my feelings. My big feelings are beautiful. I understand that even saying those words to yourself may be triggering. Self-compassion can be difficult for people who have pervasive shame. Even tiny bits of self-compassion can feel forbidden. If you're struggling to find compassion for yourself, try finding compassion towards someone else who's had a similar experience. By seeing love in them, you will be reminded of the love within you. Experiencing compassion can melt away the shame. Compassion is the antidote to shame. When we align our energy with the love of the universe through prayer, meditation, affirmations, and self-compassion, we open up our consciousness to see ourselves in the light of who we truly are. Even after taking a moment to practice compassion for yourself, you may still feel entrenched in shame or self-loathing. Let yourself off the hook for how you feel. Say to yourself in that moment, shame is a natural emotion. Self-compassion can melt away shame. Shame is terrifying to face, so if you feel overwhelmed, numb, or even agitated, that's okay. Don't judge or deny any of your feelings at this moment. Continue to take these concepts and practices at your own pace and never push past your own comfort level. Establishing a healthy relationship with your shame must be done slowly and with the right support. My hope is that you are now open to the possibility that you no longer need to stay stuck in the shame freeze or a constant state of self-protection. I'm proud of you. I hope you can feel it through this audio. You've started healing the deepest wound that will lead to the greatest freedom and peace. Giving voice to your shame is the first step to releasing its grip.